Hello and welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast, bringing you all of your A-10 coverage. My name is Tyler. We will be doing this podcast without my co-host Matt, who will be joining us again for the next episode. But for this, it'll just be me. We're going to start off with a quick little thing about how I not only believe it is possible, but actually still likely that the A-10 will receive multiple bids into this year's tournament. Just looking at some historical precedent that has been set over the last 4 years by not only this conference, but also the American Athletic, which has tended to be the most comparable mid-major to the A-10 over the past few years. After that, we'll speak to Duquesne broadcasting legend Ray Goss, who will give us some insights on the Dukes, and then do a little story time about his illustrious 51-year career. So without further ado, just going into why I believe the A-10 is still in good shape to get at least one at-large bid. Two seems like a dream at this point, although maybe there's still a mathematical possibility there. The biggest part is that if you just look at the history of the A-10, every team to have finished over 700 with a winning percentage in conference play has gone on to make the tournament one way or the other. Now, if you put that in 2018-2019 season terms, that would mean that you would need a record of 15-3 or better. Now, at this point, I don't believe that just about any team could finish, say, 15-3 or 16-2 and get into the tournament. It seems like really the only three teams that are still in play are VCU, St. Louis, and Davidson. Although I wouldn't say that Dayton is completely out of it yet. But once again, it seems very unlikely. Now, the two reasons that I look at this are just the precedent of teams being able to recover from poor non-conference RPIs, and then just the fact that the top three teams in the conference really are set up well schedule-wise. So diving in on that, VCU, St. Louis, and Davidson only play each other once. There's no double-up in either of those matchups. Now, the easiest schedule at this point appears to favor the Wildcats. If they can get themselves to, say, like 12-2 as we head into late February, they close out with at LaSalle, home for Fordham, home for St. Bonaventure, at Richmond. That's just about as easy of a stretch as you can get. I know I personally put all four of those teams between 10-13 in my pre-conference power rankings. If you're a Davidson team with a good shot at making the tournament, you really don't want to lose one of those games. Now, the one difficulty for them, they do have to go on the road to face both St. Louis and VCU, but both of those games come early in January, and if they can just split those and go 1-1, they give themselves some room to be able to make one or two slip-ups in February within the conference and still be in good shape. Now, I actually believe that they are the most likely team to pull this off. I have them as my predicted number one to win the conference, and even though they've struggled across their first two games, it's just pretty clear that Kellen Grady is not yet healthy. Now, is this the kind of injury that he's going to be able to bounce back from in the next few weeks? I don't know. Unfortunately, I'm not in the Davidson training room. But once he does get back to full health, this team should be able to win at least 14 games in the conference. I think if they can get to 16-2, they're just about as close to a tournament lock as you can be, as long as they don't lose to a terrible team in Brooklyn. 15-3 is going to be a bigger question mark. Now, as for VCU, their schedule is kind of weighted towards the middle. They have a key 5-game stretch in late January leading into early February, where they have to play at Davidson, then have home games against Dayton and UMass, a road trip to Rhode Island and then to Duquesne, and then come back home to play in-state rival George Mason. This is the toughest part of their schedule. Plenty of lower-level teams are waiting there in early January and then into late February and March. But just like with Davidson playing their tough games in January, if VCU can come out of this at 4-2, they actually have a good shot to make it into the tournament at 15-3, and possibly even 14-4. given that they have been the A-10's most impressive team in terms of net so far. And that win on the road at Texas is just going to keep looking better and better. So that stretch, starting with at Davidson, closing out with home for George Mason, I would say that 4-2 right there sets up VCU nicely. Now for St. Louis, they have a pretty easy first 13 games for them. Their toughest road games in those stretch are at Rhode Island and at Duquesne, which are both games that will be difficult, but are the kind of ones that a tournament team should win, or at the very least split and go 1-1. Now, their backstretch is extremely hard. Really, the only other difficult game to worry about in the early going is the home game for Davidson. But just having that in Chaffetz Arena should be a big boon for the Billikens. Now, taking a look at last year's two at-large teams, neither of them were particularly impressive in the non-conference. Now, granted, Rhode Island came into the season with heavy expectations, having coming off of one winning a tournament game the year before against Creighton, and then giving an Oregon team that ended up making the Final Four a really great run for their money in the second round. But their only two big wins in the non-conference were against Seton Hall and Providence. That should sound pretty familiar to St. Louis fans, given that those are their two big wins this year. Last year's St. Bonaventure team, they had a win at Syracuse that is quite frankly probably better than any team the A-10 has this year, but they were also being dragged down by a bad home loss to Niagara. This is really just a simple way of saying neither of these teams blew anyone away in the non-conference last year, and so it's not ridiculous to say that one of this year's A-10 teams could recover from really a kind of bland non-conference outside of, obviously, that VCU win over Texas. Now, two big concerns as it pertains to the net ratings are just the number of A-10 teams in the sub-200 this year. We currently have 5. And then the fact that none of the teams are currently in the top 40. So I looked back over the last 4 years, and the idea of the A-10 having multiple sub-200 teams is not a foreign one. In fact, they've actually had either 3 or 4 teams outside the top 200 each of the last 4 years. The most comparable conference, the American Athletic, had 2 last year, 3 in both 2017 and 16, and then 4 in 2015. Both of these conferences have had to deal with being dragged down by poor teams for years. The A-10, it's been Fordham, and then other than that, it's been kind of a rotation of various other teams. LaSalle was down there for a year, Duquesne was there for a year, GW was there for a year. Whereas in the American, it's kind of been the same culprits. East Carolina and Tulane typically down there. South Florida joined them for a little bit. Even Houston, a program that is now actually in the top 25, finished the 2015 season as a sub-200 team. Now, just a little refresher, obviously over this 4-year period, the A-10's gotten 3 bids every year, thus our namesake. The American got 2 in both 2015 and 2017. They got 3 last year, and they got 4 bids during a big 2016 season. So this is about as comparable as it's going to get, this conference averaging ever so slightly less than 3 bids a year, but at the same time, they haven't had as many quote-unquote bid thieves as the A-10 has in this time. Now, combining the two conferences, in each of these last 4 years, at least one team that finished in outside of the top 40 in the RPI, since the net didn't exist back then, went on to get an at-large bid from these conferences. Last year, it was Houston, who finished at 48th when the calendar turned from 2017 to 2018. Dayton was 46th in 2017. In 2015, Cincinnati was 54th and Davidson was 60th. This is another potential blueprint for this year's A-10, and especially this year's Wildcats team. Davidson, as I said, finished 60th in non-conference RPI that year, then rode a hot streak from Tyler Kalinowski along with a young Jack Gibbs, ended up winning the A-10 in their first year in there, and made the tournament. Now, the one very interesting year is 2016. The A-10 got 4 teams in, the American got, sorry, the A-10 got 3 teams in, the American got 4 teams in. Now, among those five at-large bids, four of them actually started in very poor shape. Coming into conference season, Tulsa was 92nd, Temple was 95th, Cincinnati was 110th, and VCU was actually sitting all the way down at 142. In fact, the only at-large bid from either of these conferences that came in the top 40 was Dayton. I know I've thrown a lot of numbers at you guys over the past 10 minutes, but really this is all just to say the A-10 may be having a down year, but this conference is certainly not dead. I really believe that we're in a good place for the A-10 to get at least two bids. Now, the big line is going to be 15-3. I keep just harping on that number. I don't think 14-4 is going to be enough. Maybe it is for VCU, depending on what teams they beat and what teams they lose to. As for Davidson and SLU, 15-3 will leave them as question marks. I think 16-2 for any of these teams would be pretty close to a lock. And now, as I wrap this up, I just want to heed one piece of advice to all of these teams. And VCU reminded us of this tonight when they fell behind by 17 at home to LaSalle. You have to keep the sub-200 losses off of your resume. LaSalle, St. Bonaventure, Richmond, Fordham, GW. None of these teams can afford to drop any of those games. Now, granted, over the first 3 days, they've played some close ones. VCU tonight against LaSalle. St. Louis had to get a big stop against UMass on the final possession. Davidson struggled against Duquesne on Saturday. But just the fact that they escaped from those games and doing it in the fashion that they did really makes me believe that even if none of these teams are good enough to get to 15-3, maybe one of them could just luck their way into 15-3, because they certainly all have enough talent to go 12-6 at an absolute minimum. But I'm going to put it on the record right now. I really believe that the A-10 is going to get two bids. I think that Davidson is the most likely. And as I said, watch out for that 14-game mark with the Wildcats. If they hit that point at 12-2, it's going to be smooth sailing from there until Brooklyn. And now we will move along to my interview with longtime Duquesne broadcaster Ray Goss, who in his 51st season is now the longest tenured play-by-play announcer in Division I men's college basketball. Just a true legend at his craft, and a guy who continues to announce with even more energy and skill with each passing year. A guy who's truly an even better announcer now than he was when I first started listening to him almost 10 years ago. We had a great conversation about both the current state of Duquesne basketball and just some of the great things that he has seen over his time as an announcer. So just stick around for a great conversation. So I'm here right now with legendary Duquesne radio play-by-play announcer Ray Goss, the longest tenured play-by-play man in all of Division I men's college basketball, currently working on his 51st year. And so we're just going to take a few minutes, talk to him about how he feels about this year's Dukes team and just some comments about his illustrious career. So first of all, just thank you for coming on the show. You're actually our first ever guest on the podcast.
Wow, I feel honored.
So I guess just to start it off, we're about halfway through the year now, moving into A-10 play. What are your expectations for this edition of the Dukes team?
Well, I'm hoping we can go 500 or maybe a little more in the A-10. I always look at the pre-conference part of the schedule, and I was pretty close. I had us at 10-3, but I had us beating NJIT. I had every game right in my own mind, not counting point spreads. But NJIT was really good, and they caught us on a off night, and so we ended 9-4. I was hoping we were 10-3. Now, in the conference last year, we were 7-11. I'm hoping we go 9-9. 10-8 would be great. So the conference, I think, is down a little this year, Tyler, but maybe we can even do better if the team continues to improve.
Yeah, I think general sentiment and people who've been watching the A-10 throughout the offseason would agree that this is not the conference's finest year. I personally had Duquesne as my predicted fifth team going into conference play, so that would probably be slightly better than 9-9, but I'd certainly be happy with a 500 season, too.
Well, you're more optimistic than I am. I always have the glass half full. You have it about three quarters full.
So I guess you're someone who's watched this whole season so far. What are some things that you would say to watch out for the Dukes this year, whether it's for people who are fans of other A-10 teams who maybe are tuning in to see them the first time when their team plays them, or even just Dukes fans who have been watching all year? Just some little subtleties that you're seeing that maybe the average fan isn't seeing.
Well, the first thing isn't a subtlety, because starting with preseason practice, we kind of knew that Sincere Carey was going to be the starting point guard. He's been better than I expected. He's really been solid. I know Coach Keith Dambrot would not like to play him as many minutes as he's been playing him, but he needs him. And he's just been spectacular, both scoring, assist, defense, steals. He's been outstanding, and he's a pure freshman. And, it's just been marvelous to watch him. Now, the other guy that's really we need, and he's been playing well, is Michael Hughes, the big 6'8 center. He's got a nice set of shoulders on him. Unfortunately, that knee injury really slowed him down there, and he's been slow coming back. But he gives us an inside presence, and you need an outside-inside game. And, of course, we have Eric Williams back from last year. Eric is a sophomore. I think a lot of people expected him to explode this year, and he's had some good games, but his shooting lately has been off a little. I expect him to come back on because he has good form. He's a good player. He's got great talent, and he's only a sophomore. So, that's kind of an up-and-down year a lot of times. He was very good last year, picked preseason number two on the second team, I should say, because of his great rebounding. He's just an outstanding rebounder for someone 6'6". And it'd be nice if he can just get steadier, because we need an impact player like him.
Yeah, so at this point, Duquesne kind of has their, I don't want to say defined, but it feels like they're kind of settling in towards a top six. And then you have five guys right below them: Austin Rotrov, Amari Kelly, Lamar Norman, Brandon Wade, and Kellen Taylor, who kind of just scrap for minutes with each other, and depending on the night, one of them's going to play more than the others. So is there one of those guys that you maybe see a breakout coming over the next 2 months?
Well, Norman had two great games there in a row, and I think he had 15 and 16 points, and he's kind of fallen off a little. He hasn't seen that many minutes. Coach says, well, they just the situations that he hasn't been able to fit in. I know the coach likes him, and he can score, and a lot of times that's what you need. Jared Durham always says, you got to score, and we need to do that. And if Eric Williams is off a little, and Michael Hughes, they've got him kind of bottled up, or they hold him down at 10 or 11 points, then you need somebody to pick up the slack, and he could score.
So do you think he could be a proper fill-in for the now-since-transferred Mike Lewis?
I think so. I think he could be. The other guy we're not talking about is Tavian Dunn-Martin, and I'm just waiting for him to explode with some three balls, because I've seen enough in practice. He was just literally lighting it up in practice with three balls. Now, what's happened, he's only 5'8". He's quick, and he gives us some a good defense. He can scatter around there and disrupt things. But he's missed too many threes, in my estimation, because maybe they're just a little forced or a little contested. When he's open, I'd bet the mortgage on him.
So I'm actually really glad you mentioned that. That's one of the things I've been watching for myself. She's shooting under 30% from three, but over 90% from the line. You really never see those two numbers go together. So one of those is obviously going to start moving towards the mean. But his freshman year at Akron just makes it seem like the three-point shooting's a lot more likely to go up than it is for the foul shooting to go down.
Oh, I agree. I think we're going to see a game where he hits four or five threes in it and it propels us to victory. We need that one guy that jump out. You indicated it. We need Sincere Carey, I should say, to play his usual game. Michael Hughes to do what he does inside. Hopefully Eric Williams to average double figures and double doubles even. And then some other guy to pop out of there.
Yeah, so you mentioned Sincere Carey there. I actually want to bounce over to him real quick. You obviously have been around this team for a very, very long time. My knowledge of them goes back only about 10 to 15 years. So when I think great Duquesne freshman point guards, I think TJ McConnell, I think Eric Evans. You've obviously seen all the way back to guys like Norm Nixon, who was a borderline NBA Hall of Famer. So where do you put Carey kind of in the class of freshman that you've seen at Duquesne?
I think he's in that group. And I go back, as you say, a long time. Mike Barr and Bill Zoff were great point guards for Duquesne. Both of them played pro ball. And, of course, Norm Nixon played pro ball. Yet freshman years, they didn't jump out and, you know, make first-team All-American or anything like that. You only have those blue chippers, those certain ones, and we don't get them here at Duquesne. Most schools don't. It's Duke and, you know, the top schools that get those kind of people. But I think since Eric Carey has the potential to be among those top great point guards at Duquesne.
And I'm sure you've had your fair share of interactions with him to this point. I know you've interviewed him for some post games. Does it seem like he's really happy here? This is the kind of place where he'd be thrilled to stay all 4 years?
Let's hope so. He seems to be. He's very low-key. You know, I told you, he's playing a lot of minutes, more than the coach would like it to have him play, but I think he can handle 35, 36 minutes and not really wear down. He's the kind of guy, you look at him, he doesn't even sweat. I like those kind of players because I relate a lot to tennis since I played it, and I remember when Bjorn Borg was touring and just playing so well and playing five-set matches, and at the end, he's as fresh as at the beginning. And I read about him, and it said his resting pulse rate was 35. And I don't know what Sincere Carey's is, but it doesn't look like he even breathes hard out there.
Yeah, he's been a revelation this year. He wasn't even on my radar. In our preseason preview, I talked about all their freshmen coming in. And the first guys I mentioned were Gavin Bizot and Austin Rotrov, this little point guard who, as I learned from your broadcast, this was his biggest offer. He was a guy who just wasn't on people's radars. So I'm thrilled to see what he's done so far.
Yeah, you're right. And speaking of the big guys, I think Rotrov is going to come on. He had that one great game, and he's been spotty here and there. But at least he has some moves underneath and can make some close-in shots, and you need that kind of thing.
Yeah, so just one last thing I want to talk about with the freshmen. You haven't done your full gauntlet of A-10 teams yet, but do you think that Carey has a good chance to win Rookie of the Year this season?
I think he'll be on the all-rookie team. I'm going to predict that. I haven't seen enough of the other freshmen, but you never know. If he keeps playing as steady as he can, they look mainly at stats, and you know, if he can continue to be up there in the nation as far as steals and assists and average double figures, why not?
I mean, I absolutely agree. We're unfortunately taping this right before Duquesne plays Fordham. One of the other top candidates is their freshman guard, Nick Honor. And so I'm really excited to see just how those two go up against each other. And we'll know by the end of tonight whether one of them maybe stands out above the other one. But my other question about the A-10 in general, do you have a prediction for who you think is going to win the title?
No, I haven't seen enough of them. I see spot them here or there on TV. Of course, we already played Davidson. I knew they're going to be right up there, and they're tough to play at home. And we played them even, as you know, 3 minutes to go. We're one up and got on scored 7-2 down the stretch there to lose that ball game. So I'm very interested in these next couple home games. Fordham should be a win. We should be favored. We're talking before the game. And St. Joe's Saturday, I think, is going to be a big game because they're picked second, I think, in the league by the coaches and all that. And they haven't been playing that well. I think they have some injuries. So if we win that one, and then we have good shots, Richmond, it's tough to win down there. But GW is not playing that well. So the schedule kind of favors us early. It'd be nice to be 4-1 or even 3-2 after the first five games.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Richmond's GW, probably two of the easier road games, that you're going to get this year. I've kind of marked the St. Joe's game weeks ago as one that could really be a nice test to see what the Dukes are made of. So from there, I just want to bounce into a little bit about your illustrious career. So obviously, you've been doing this for now over five decades. Did you ever see your career going a different way, whether you maybe end up pursuing like an NBA job or just being in a completely different sport?
Well, I really pursued NBA jobs, as you know. You read my book, you told me, and everything. It came close once. It just didn't work out because of the way things broke, and the ratings were down that year, and they went with a game of the week nationally rather than regional games, which they were featuring for a couple of years. And even when I did the Piranhas back in 93 and 94 and Duquesne, I thought even it's like the minor leagues for the pros, and you're hurt a little bit, or people might talk about it. It's not something. I went after a lot of NBA jobs. One I can remember when Charlotte left, and then they started another franchise there. I happened to meet one of their assistant coaches at the A-10 playoffs when they were in Dayton. And we kind of hit it off, so we exchanged cards, and I sent him my information, got it to the right people and everything. But they don't even listen to you. All you talk is to a secretary. Hey, did they get it? Did he listen to my tapes and all that? And so it's very, very difficult. And there's so many people in this field now, it's even more difficult. So I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that I enjoy doing Duquesne. I never hit the NBA as such. I've done some pro games in Pittsburgh for the Piranhas, the Wrens, the Condors, but way back a few here and there, and I've enjoyed it. But I'm very satisfied with my career, having done Duquesne all this time. Yeah, I would have liked to have done more. I make no bones about it, but it's been good.
So do you have expectations at this point that you're going to retire from this job at a certain date, or is that something that when your last game is here, you'll just know it then?
Yeah, I think I'll know it. I hope they don't have to drag me out kicking and screaming. I don't think I've lost anything doing the games. Where I've lost it is walking in airports. I've got a bum right ankle that needs replacing, really. Some orthopods want to do that, and I'm resisting it. And I guess I'll start using crutches or a cane or something to get around. But as long as I can sit down at the game, I'm okay. So if I can get there to the games, and I enjoy it. I tell people, when I was working full-time and doing all these games, and even more, I did a lot of football and a lot of other stuff, it was like dessert. Doing games is like dessert. It's very enjoyable. And now all I do is dessert. I don't work during the day, so that's good.
So they have a microphone up in the rafters for you, up with the jerseys of some of the Duquesne greats. Does that mean that they just can't get rid of you now?
Yeah. Well, they've been very nice to me. Yeah. I think unless I really screw up badly, I don't think they will. I mean, you never know. But no, I think I'll know myself. If I start slipping to a point where, you know, I'm missing too much, I think I owe that to the audience, and I think I'll pull the plug on myself when it's time.
So your partner now for about a decade or so has been a Duquesne legend on the floor in Jarrett Durham. Is that a partnership that you hope continues for the rest of your career?
Yes, because he really enjoys it, and he really is knowledgeable. He sees things as a coach that I don't see. And I always say coaches know more than I will ever know. Keith Dambrot, whoever it is at Duquesne. They're with the players every day, and so you watch, you don't want to second guess them. Maybe you indicate things that would he think about doing this or that. But Jarrett does know. I remember once last year, I forget the game, but all of a sudden we're killing the other team, and he said, they need to go with three guards. They can't match up with us. All of a sudden, the other team called a timeout, put in another guard, took out a big guy.
Well, just mentioning Jarrett Durham kind of triggers this question in my mind. Is there a specific player, whether it's for Duquesne or an opponent you've seen, or even just a game that's still, after all these years, feels so fresh in your mind, just being able to watch them?
Well, you know, going way, way back, Pistol Pete Maravich. Way back in 68-69, the first year I did the games, Duquesne played in the all-college tournament in Oklahoma City. And we met LSU in the finals, lost the game 94-91. I think he had 54 against us. And it was just a whale of a game. And that's before the three-point shot. But he did things back then that a lot of pros are doing now. But he was exceptional.
So I was actually really hoping that you would mention that name. I know you've talked about seeing him in your book. People say, like, watching Pistol Pete at LSU was just mind-blowing. And is he the kind of guy that, if he played now with the three-point line, do you feel like he could have been, like, one of the 10 greatest players of all time?
Probably. The thing you have to watch, though, Tyler, is, like, I go back watching the NBA when Bob Cousy popularized the behind-the-back dribble. He didn't really start it, but nobody did it. And they're thinking, wow, look at that guy. He can dribble behind his back. No, these guys, everybody does it. And they dribble between their legs. And the moves are so much better. Everything is better now. So could Bob Cousy play today? Probably not. But you got to judge him in their era. And, yeah, Pistol Pete Maravich, I think, given everything that he would have an advantage today, with the conditioning and all that kind of stuff, yeah, he would be one of the best.
So is there a specific Duquesne game that over these years still stands out in your mind? I know for me, I think back to the year that they made the NIT when Ron Everhart was still the coach. And even though they lost to Virginia Tech that night, dragged them to double overtime on their home court. I still remember Aaron Jackson just laying on the bench after the first overtime in the middle of a Herculean game for him.
Yeah, that was one of them. There have been many. I still go back. I think it was Providence. It was in the 70s when Nixon was playing, and they had a couple of great players. Names start to escape me, but we were down in overtime by 1 point, and Providence had the ball with 8 seconds to go, and Nixon stole the inbounds pass. And he dribbled to the top of the key. This is at the old Civic Arena. And about 3 seconds to go, he goes up in the air, and you think he's going to take the shot. You know, the time is running out. He threw it to Bernie O'Keefe in the corner. Bernie O'Keefe wasn't even a starter for Duquesne. When Bernie got it, there was about a second and a half left. He had to let it fly, and he made it, and we won the game in overtime.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So those are the nuggets I was looking for. This is why I wanted to talk to you. So, as we said earlier, 51st year for you behind the microphone. The only other guy in this sport to do that is Bill Hillgrove, who works just across town over at Pitt. And it's kind of funny, when I think of college basketball announcers, I grew up listening to you. When I think of college football announcers, I think of Bill Hillgrove. Grew up listening to him on Pitt football. So you're a year ahead of him on the
That's only because I'm older.
Line.
You know he went to Duquesne, don't you?
I actually didn't.
Yeah, he graduated in 62. I graduated in 58. And it just so happened that Pitt football and basketball gone on the air a year after that we started, or I started in 68, yeah.
So, is there anything in the back of your mind that you feel like you need to outlast him?
No. We're friends. We see each other and we compare notes and everything. No, he does a great job, and of course he does the Steelers too, and we just admire each other's work, and we'll continue to do it until something happens.
So, I guess my last question for you is, it's been now 42 years since the Dukes have made the NCAA tournament. It's the longest stretch of any team among the power conferences plus the top four mid-major conferences. Do you think Keith Dambrot is the guy to bring them back?
Absolutely. And this is funny. Keith told both Jared and myself, because Jared's been, you know, around for a long time. He said, I got to get you guys to the NCAAs. That's his goal. Of course, the team would have to go too, but I think he can do it. I think this team, the foundation is there now. They're going to be better next year. 2 years from now, look out.
So obviously they're the third youngest team in the country. Now that Mike Lewis is gone, they have no seniors and they're only juniors. Kellen Taylor, who actually isn't even on a scholarship because he's a football player. So in an ideal world where no one transfers, all these guys are still here in 2 years. So that's where I've kind of put my eye towards, that being the season in 2021. And you're nodding your head like you agree that that's going to be the magical year.
Absolutely. They'll be better next year. These guys will all get better for a year because, as you know, freshmen and sophomores, they always say the best thing about freshmen at the end of the year, they're almost like sophomores. So they should improve as the season goes along. So I'm still hopeful this year we'll have a winning record overall. Next year should be better. And as you said, 2 years from now, look out.
All right, so that's all the questions I got for you before we part. I don't know if you have any bold Duquesne statements that you want to make.
No, nothing. I just enjoy doing the games. It's sure more fun when they win, but you take them one game at a time, just like the coaches do.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for doing this. You are the honorary first guest of the 3-Bid League podcast, and good luck and go Dukes.
Okay, thanks.
So before we wrap it up, just a quick error to mention. I said that St. Louis had beaten both Providence and Seton Hall this year. That is not accurate. I was getting confused with UMass's win over Providence, when in fact St. Louis has actually beaten Butler in Seton Hall this year. Just wanted to correct that, even though the quality of wins are pretty much the same. And with that, I just want to thank everybody once again for listening to this episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at 3-Bid League Pod. Please continue to listen in. Please tell a friend of a fellow A-10 team that might enjoy this pod. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to send any questions for future pods. We'll be ramping them up to about once a week or once every week and a half as conference play gets going. Thank you.